One of my all-time favorite poems that I've actually recently tried to memorize. I want to share with you a particular stanza. It starts off where this is actually the third stanza in the poem. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees. The further sky, the greater length. The more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, and trees and men, good timbers grow. I've really been thoughtful about this lately. I was with a group of friends, and we were talking about some religious principles and some spirituality concepts and spirituality, and I made a comment and I shared a story with the group there, and I had several people come up and say that was actually really insightful for me and that was really impactful, and for that reason, I decided to share it here on my podcast because this is a story from when I was pretty young, and it's actually become something of a life parable for me. And I'll explain why here. So when I was a kid, we weren't ever super wealthy, especially growing up. I mean, I wouldn't say that we were in any way destitute. We always had enough, but we just had a lot of mouths to feed in my family. And I remember Christmases never being anything too elaborate. I remember that maybe when I was younger, when there was just like three of us or four of us or five of us, I guess, it was a little different. But as I got older, and especially in my probably from the age of 8 onward, I feel like from my memory, there just wasn't a lot. And as a result, I mean, I don't remember ever going out to eat almost ever as a kid. We never went on really any family vacations. And it was kind of like make your own fun. That was the way we were raised, which I'm really grateful for now. It's funny how a lot of things that look like a disadvantage when you're younger end up being a massive advantage when you're older. One day, my dad came home, and this is kind of a foggy memory, at least this part of it is. But for my memory, he came home and he's like, "All right, guys, I have a surprise." And we were all very excited, right? Because this never happens. And he has this box, and it's super long and narrow, and it's kind of a cylinder shape, and it's plastic, and we're like, what on earth? It's colorful, and we can't figure out what it is. And he pops off the lid on this cylinder, and he dumps out all these like this fabric and these poles, and it was just like, what on earth is this? It looked almost like a tent. And I'm thinking, goodness, what's in this? What's this all about? And he didn't tell us from memory. He didn't say anything. He just kind of started assembling it, and we started putting it together. And by the end of it, we realized as it kind of formed into this triangle that it was a kite, and it was one of those two-string kites, right? The ones that have two handles on them that you can pull one side really hard and they spin, and you pull the other side and they spin the other way. And anyway, so we were just ecstatic as kids. We were just like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And I remember it was kind of a windy day. I don't know if we actually ended up flying it that day. I think for some reason maybe the wind was either too strong or something. I can't remember exactly. And I remember we went out there, and it's so funny. My young, probably 8, 9, I don't know how old I was, honestly, even 7-year-old brain remembers it so funny. But I remember it pulling us around. The wind would just like pull us almost off our feet, which probably may have been the case because I was pretty small. And I remember just dying for my turn. I just couldn't wait for my turn because I'm kind of competitive, right? And I remember seeing like, because I remember we kind of said, like, how high can you make the kite go? How can you make it go? And we had to wait for like the perfect gust, and it would just shoot up in the air, and it's almost like it'd disappear. It's like that just it was just incredible to see, think of how high that kite was going, and to think of what it must see from its angle and from its perspective. And I just think, well, I thought, wow. And then this idea started to formulate in my mind. I was like, you know what? I bet I can get that kite higher than anybody. And I had to wait pretty patiently, and my dad went first, and then my mom went and had her try, then my brother went and had his try, and then it was my turn. And I remember as I was getting it higher and higher in the sky, I kind of thought, all right, is everyone watching? And I don't know if anyone was, it didn't really matter. But I thought, okay, this is the ultimatum. And I went and I threw the strings, like threw them out of my hand, and the kite just flew up in the air. I was like, yes, it was like score. I got the kite the highest, and I figured it'd probably disappear, and I figured it'd probably be in space. I mean, who knows, right? At this point, it was only a matter of just that. I mean, I was kind of one of those type of kids, right? It was all about novelty. I was like, the concept was so cool. And then, to my surprise, the kite tumbled from the sky and boom, and it broke into pieces. I mean, just absolutely blew up into pieces, right? Hit the ground so hard. And I remember that just being the most bizarre thing that ever happened. Why didn't it fly higher when I let go? What was that about? I finally it was struggling so hard, right? I could feel the tension. It was pulling against me. And I could barely hold on with my little 7-year-old frame. Wouldn't it make sense that when I let it go, it would be able to finally fly at its maximum capacity? I think you probably know where I'm going with this. But for me, the concept became so profound because I've been all over the place with all these different life philosophies, right? I've tried so hard to find truth in my life, and I've sought for it so desperately. And being vulnerable here again, as I often know on this podcast, I found that sometimes what we think we want is quite destructive. And it sounds like a good idea, but often it's not. Like, what we think we're getting is not often what we get. And when I say that, I know that's being very, very vague, but I remember thinking that if only I had more freedom, if only I had less rules, if only I had less structure, if only I had less, if only I was finally allowed to be free, then I could truly be happy. Then I'll finally be happy. Then things will finally make sense. Then I'll finally experience fulfillment. I wanted that liberation. I thought the more I'll remove these responsibilities and these rules from my life, the more freedom I'm going to experience personally. Much like that kite, as I began to let go of a lot of things that used to bind me, things that used to keep me tethered, the chains that I perceive them as, the ball and chains in my life. Every time I got rid of one, I didn't fly higher, I found. I didn't experience more freedom, I experienced less. And this is maybe a foreign concept and a familiar concept at the same time, but I think that Jesus Christ said it best in the New Testament when he said, "When you seek to save your life, you will lose it. But when you seek to lose your life, you will save it." Bottom line is that at the end of the day, our attempts to remove responsibility from our lives actually chain us down worse. It is the chains that make us free. It's the string tied to an anchor that allows us to fly. Without that string, we, like that kite, are nothing more than a butterfly in a hurricane. We are thrown about by every wind out there. We are completely vulnerable and tossed around and shattered, from my experience. Now, I'm all about go with the flow. I'm all about not fighting against life. This is different. This is a whole different concept of what I'm talking about. As we seek to bind ourselves to higher ideas and higher ideals, principles, truth, integrity, things of value and of morality, we will find a capacity to fly higher. I used to be more or less anti-religion because I thought it was so binding. Now, I'm not pro all religion. I think that you have to be wise, and I think you have to be deliberate, and if you're very prudent and making sure you're binding yourself to correct principles. But that being said, even at that, with all of the things that are negative about religion that I see as clearly as anybody else, there is so much power in binding yourself to higher ideas with a group of people. And isn't that what religion is? At the end of the day, it's a group of people who have come together to bind themselves under common ideas. They tether themselves to something. So when the winds come, rather than either being grounded, as some people are, they have the ability to fly with more strength, power, and precision than they ever could have if they just cut the ropes and lived by nothing and died by nothing. Living for something, living and tied to something deeper than yourself is the only way to truly fly, I believe. Now, with all that being said, what do we bind ourselves to? That is a question that I have wrestled with my entire life. What do we bind ourselves to? What are the anchors? I would not be so arrogant as to tell you what specifically those things are that you should bind yourself to, those things that will anchor you and provide you stability. But I think that if you are looking and you have, as they say, eyes to see, I think that you will find it for yourself. Those who keep seeking for truth find truth. And as you seek for higher ideals to which to bind yourself, you're going to find them. I believe they'll come in forms of principles. You look for things that are evident across all people, all time, all religions, all philosophies. You're going to find there are certain things that are so deep and so true that they are scattered across the most brilliant minds. You'll find common ideas among people with high character and people who lived rich lives. I loved what Stephen Covey said. He once wrote about his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, that his ideas were present in every major religion from his studies. And that's how he knew they were principles. Because he went to the most deep sources of human understanding that he could find out there, and he found commonalities and he grouped them into 7 principles. And I actually, and for myself, and if you've listened to any of my episodes, you'll know that I love Stephen Covey's work. He probably is probably one of the few people in this world that I truly look up to as a role model. So with that concept in mind, what I would encourage you to do, as I have been attempting to do in my life, is find those principles, find those higher ideals, find those common beliefs. And don't be afraid to bind yourself to higher ideas. We often don't like that, but the power of a club and the power of a group, even a group of friends, you know, when friends have like their own rules inside the friend group, if those rules mean something, they can bind you to much greater things. Why is it so powerful to go to the gym with a friend? Because there's something about maybe common suffering or an ability to be there with someone who has a common goal that gives you strength. There's a funny quote that was on the, it was written inside of my backpack that I use for my long distance running, and it said, "There's something about suffering that brings people together." And I thought it was really funny because this is, you know, this specific backpack was designed for 100-mile races, the Hard Rocker, which is just a absolutely brutal 100-mile run. And anyways, I was like, that's exactly true. Don't be afraid of the pain. Don't be afraid to tie yourself to things that may seem limiting. Do things that wise men do. Again, you're going to find, as I have, that there's a lot of advice out there. It's funny how much you will get marriage advice from people who have unstable marriages or have ended their marriages, or, and then again, I'm not saying that they're wrong. Again, I'm not denying that they have probably a tremendous amount of wisdom, because there's a lot you learn from failing. But it is always very ironic to me how many poor people want to give financial advice, and how many people who are unhealthy want to give you health advice, and how many people who are not fit want to give you fitness advice. And it's extremely common. It's kind of an ironic thing where they feel like maybe, I do think that sometimes those who can't do teach. Those are not the kind of people who probably are going to lead you in the right direction. Look for people who are living their best lives, people who are living in a way that is sustainable, people who are living in a way that's going to leave a legacy, who are going to mean something, who are going to really change the world in their own way, and then find what binds them. It's quite remarkable. Another thing that was very interesting to me, and this is another one of my heroes, is Lev. All right, my voice cut off in that last little bit there. For some reason, I stopped my recording. I feel like I got a little monotone on this last recording. I hope you all it all made sense, and this was kind of a less prepared thought. I just have had these ideas mulling around in my mind for quite a while, and I wanted to get them out there. So let me know what you think. I do love your feedback. Thank you for those that have given me your feedback. I do read. I read every message, and I'm very grateful to hear what you all have to say. And I'm grateful to know your beliefs and to know what lights you up, what makes you feel passionate. So keep in touch, and we'll see you on the next episode.